This is an adult podcast made by adults for adults. Apparently, no one likes Martin Scorsese and Dennis Villeneuve. Bathroom eating habits and the nuances of public and private water. All of this on this bonus episode of Fake Film Fans.
Hey folks, welcome to Fake Film Fans. I'm Suede Best, your samurai father.
I'm what love sucks. Oh wait, I should introduce myself first. I forgot about that too.
Did you say what love sucks or wet love socks?
I'm Walter, and I'm what love sucks, if sucks is spelled F-I-S-H.
Cool, that makes no sense. I don't even know how to unpack that.
That's who I am. There's not much we can say about that.
So you're what love sucks if love is spelled F-I-S-H or sucks is spelled F-I-S-H.
Sucks.
Cool. Alrighty. Dory?
Hi, I'm Tori. I'm your overflowing recycling.
Oh, nice.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Welcome to Fake Film Fans, everyone. This is a bonus episode. We just love Tori so much, we wanted to have him back on. And I a few nights ago was just eating pork tenderloin just like directly over the sink before bed, and it made me remember all the sink meals we ate together in college. And I kind of wanted to just sort of ask Tori if he had, what was his favorite sink meal, and if he maybe wanted to explain the concept of a sink meal.
So to give me time to think about my favorite sink meal, the sink meal is a meal you eat over the sink whilst doing something with your other hand, shove into your mouth with the other. And so you want to eat it over the sink because there's going to be plenty of debris.
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 I think you're just describing a bukkake.
No. What do you mean? Can you explain, Walt?
Well, Tori said he's having something in his mouth, something with his hand, and there's a lot of debris. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing that debris is cum.
So what was my favorite sink meal? Probably in college, it would probably be a frozen waffle or just like a singular microwave chicken patty that I had just put like on the microwave dish itself. And, you know, it's kind of like soggy. Yeah. And so you just kind of do that either, you know, you're right before you leave to go somewhere, to go to work, or when you get back and you're just so hungry that you have to shove something in your mouth, or, you know, just a little secret between you and the sink before bed.
In college, my favorite sink meal was probably the peanut butter that was supposed to be for Toby that I would eat when everyone else was asleep. Toby was a dog, by the way.
You know what is so fucked up about that is not so much that you ate a dog's peanut butter instead of getting your own, but why that was his peanut butter is because he would lick the spoon and I would put the spoon back in the peanut butter. That peanut butter had tons of dog slobber. Even I wouldn't eat that peanut butter. And I would eat Toby's treats from Petco because they tasted good.
Or when your girlfriend called you a good boy, she gave you his treats.
All right. The treats, though, they were like sweet potato Oreos, and they were pretty good.
I also like eating cold cooked meat over the sink quickly, like right before bed, to banish the fear, to banish the voices, just quickly like, oh, here's some leftover steak, and here's a piece of bread, and just like put it on there with some hot sauce, just quickly eat it over the sink before I go to bed. I almost exclusively eat sink meals directly over, like either directly before bed or before bed, or in college when we had like shit to do and there was not a whole lot of time to do anything but like quickly eat a fucking chicken patty before class.
I haven't been eating a ton of sink meals, although I have been eating some weird shit, so I think I should probably get back into the practice. It's a good way to meditate.
Walter, you asked us this morning before we started.
No, I still want to talk about sink meals because I honestly think the term sink meals is literally the stupidest fucking term I've ever heard in my entire life.
What is your issue with the term?
Because I used to eat chicken patties over the sink. I just called them chicken patties.
Do you think that's because you're a disgusting monster and eat chicken wings off the floor?
Hey, those were important times. Those were good times.
I wouldn't call that food outdated food or 5 day old food. No, I'd specify. Yo, I'm eating some wings off the floor.
I would call it outdated food.
But if I, you know, when I used to drink in the morning and I like brushed my teeth and then used fucking Kentucky Gentleman, which is the cheap shitty whiskey, and rinse my mouth with it in front of the sink. Is that a sink meal?
Okay, so here's I think the important definition. A sink meal is not a food, right? What you're saying is you're eating a chicken patty. If you were gonna have dinner, you would have a chicken patty. You would still call it dinner, right? So a sink meal is like a separate time of eating. It's not like what the food is. It's the designation of where you're eating it. So like you can eat waffles for breakfast or cereal for breakfast or an avocado toast for breakfast. Or in your case, a Kentucky gentleman. These days, usually I rock a cup of coffee and a couple cigarettes.
These are not depressing at all.
Hey, I'm fucking living my life, bro.
So basically, I would have to like randomly go up to any stranger and be like, hey, what's up, dude? What did you just have for sink meal? That's how I would use it in a sentence.
Yes, exactly.
Do you randomly go up to people and ask them, hey, dude, what did you have for breakfast?
Yeah. Like if it happened in the morning, you want to know what they had for breakfast, right?
Well, I think the other way you could say it is like, you know, sometimes people say like, oh, man, I had the best burger last night. But people can also say, man, I had such a good dinner last night. And then they'll tell you what was in it. In the same way, Tori would be like up. He'd been up before me because he had to walk the dog. And I'd like walk in and I'd have my cup of coffee. And I'm like, dude. Fucking when I finally finished that essay last night, I fucking just had the nastiest sink meal. It was just like rice, cold rice that I put into the form of a ball.
Yeah, that's right. Rice was a very common sink meal. I forgot about rice.
Just a handful of rice, squeeze it to a ball shape.
I'd like to add, I would take rice, cold white rice. This is when I was having a lot of anxiety and couldn't eat much, hold down much else. And had to eat a lot of white rice.
Yeah.
But I also needed to add some kind of flavor. So I would add ketchup and then chili powder.
That's, I gotta say, that's foul, dude. I mean, I would rather eat dog peanut butter than ketchup rice.
With the chili powder.
Chili powder is fine, I guess.
So can you have gourmet meals with on the sink? So if I bring a plate and then have like a fork and a knife and then eat it over this sink, is that a sink dinner?
It's kind of against the spirit of the sink meal.
Yeah, I agree.
If you eat it with your hand like a monster, if you eat a Wagyu steak in 30 seconds.
Yeah, the speed is also integral to the sink meal. It has to be done as quickly as possible so you can get on to another thing you need to do. So actually, my real sink meal these days are just 2 scoops of peanut butter without dog spit because I have like shit to do. And so like it's usually if I have writing to do, I'll finish my cup of coffee and I'll take 2 big spoonfuls of peanut butter and then I'll be good for like 4 hours.
I've been doing like my writing done and I have to like I've been eating a lot of baked potatoes. I like baked potatoes.
Over the sink?
Oh, I kinda like I eat them while I'm standing up and doing other things.
Real quick, putting Tori on blast. Because he likes to eat on the toilet while he's pooping sometimes. So that's
cool. I don't do it anymore. I wouldn't eat like food. I would eat maybe, like, toast.
You would eat toast while you're shitting? Why?
No, it was more like I would usually be making breakfast, and I usually have to poop in the morning. Like, I'm making breakfast, and I don't want to poop yet, but then my body's like, well, no, now you're pooping now. And I'm like, well, my toast is going to get cold, and I can't waste the toast.
Yeah, I forget that Tori doesn't do things out of pleasure. He only does things out of efficiency.
Out of necessity.
Well, okay, it really bums me out when I make coffee, and then, like, for instance, I have to poop, and now my coffee's cold. Well, now I'm very, very sad.
And you can't just fucking put it in the microwave?
No, it's not the same.
Okay.
I honestly think that's like alien language to me. I would way more understand it if you were just like, if I had my mouth nerves being stimulated and my ass nerves being stimulated at the same time, I feel extra, extra excited. Then I would get it. But all this alien language about time efficiency is too much.
It's not about time and efficiency, but it is. This is actually a thing that I've had a conversation with people about is that I really like food hot. Food that's meant to be hot, I really like hot. And drinks like tea and coffee hot, I really like hot. And I really don't like to drink them cold or when they become room temperature. In fact, if I heat up food and it gets room temperature, I get really upset because I like it very, very warm. So I think it is partially a mouth thing. Like I need it to be warm.
So you can't be an Eskimo.
It's not Eskimo. It's Inuit.
That's true.
Can you apologize a little bit to our listeners about that piece of bigoted?
I apologize. Just cancel me. Don't cancel me.
Just cancel yourself.
If I had cold coffee,
No, Tori. What's wrong with you?
I apologize.
You have to eat your microphone. Eat your microphone. It's punishment.
Dude, there's a lot of things going into mouths in this podcast. That's true. But I'm trying not to lose.
You can't lose the coast.
Why are you drinking cold coffee in the morning, Tori?
No, I said if I had cold coffee and I had to go, I would just pour it out down the sink. I would rather no coffee than cold coffee.
What about like iced coffee? Or is it okay for it to be cold?
That's different. It's cold is fine. I just
like, why don't you just make it into iced coffee so you don't waste?
Well, because I prefer warm coffee. Even in the summer, I prefer warm coffee.
I mean, I do too. I almost always drink hot coffee.
So do you like your orgasms to be warm or tepid? Think about that.
I prefer to have my orgasms exclusively over the sink. Just directly right into the garbage disposal.
We went all the way in a circle because that's how we started.
You know, I was in Iceland last week, so...
Jesus Christ. The rich get richer.
How do you go to Iceland when you can't drink cold coffee? Isn't, like, Iceland made out of ice?
Yeah, your food get cold.
Yeah, your food would get cold. My food is cold! What do I do?
It's actually, typically, they have very high winds, but it's warmer than New York because of the jet stream. The jet stream goes right over Iceland, and it keeps it relatively warm.
Oh, does it? Oh, does it? Is that what it does with your pens in your pocket? And your super cool, your microphone?
No, the fact that Iceland is not that cold is pretty common knowledge, because it's the thing where, like, Greenland is not green and Iceland is not cold.
Yeah, after I use my calculator and get bullied by Suede the Chad.
Anyway, I was coming back on the plane.
Wait, can I quickly ask, you're calling it a jet stream because your plane is on the stream?
No, wait, Slinky.
I don't know what a jet stream is, so I'm
confused. No, there are like air currents that like go around the globe that are called like jet streams.
Where my flat earthers at though? Where my flat earthers at?
Don't we're gonna get flagged by Spotify.
So basically we created this with our planes?
Yeah, no. Actually, I know. I think Walter is asking an important question. Did we create this with our planes? Did we create the jet streams with our planes?
Do we create jet streams? And how do we stop them?
Yeah, how do we stop it? The Earth used to be round, and then the jet streams happened, and now it's flat again.
Oh, that's an interesting take. A flat earther that, like, wants the Earth to be round.
Yeah, we needed to get round again. Okay, so you were in Iceland.
I was on the plane back to New York, and I get very, very bored on airplanes. I have nothing to do. I don't know. I can listen to podcasts, music, whatever. There's nothing to do. So I'm flipping through the movies they had to offer, and I saw what seemed like, I don't know, it looked like a cool, artsy, Icelandic movie called Alma. And I was like, I'll check this movie out. Long story short, it was not a very good movie. And I don't even want to talk about the movie, really. What I want to talk about is the experience of watching movies in certain places, for instance, on an airplane, and how that can change a movie-watching experience. And I want to talk about it in reference to, you know, there have been a couple directors, Martin Scorsese and Denis Villeneuve, just to name two, that have talked about how they've made their opinions very clear about what they think movies are. Whether it's Scorsese saying, you know, Marvel movies aren't real cinema, or Denis Villeneuve saying, like, don't watch Dune at home, or I'll come kick your ass. And especially in the age when we can all pretty much watch Dune on our phones wherever we want. Is there a point to this conversation of, are there places where we should watch movies? What changes the movie experience? And I was thinking about it because as I was watching this not very good movie Alma that was trying to be very artsy, I was enjoying some of the shots, but then the screen, like the tablet screen, whatever, in the seat was like malfunctioning and it wouldn't let me pause or do anything.
Okay.
And I had to piss really bad, and I couldn't stop the movie or anything. You know, so it's just like one of these kinds of examples, right? Like, I being in this situation of this piece of machinery malfunctioning and...
Well, and that's interesting, because that's like being at a movie theater, right?
What, not being able to pause.
Yeah, because you can't pause at on the big screen.
That is true, but I also couldn't, I don't know, but without any of the
advantages,
good picture... Good sound.
I don't have any issue with talking about planes or trains not being the best place to watch movies. But I do have an issue with, like, Dennis and Scorsese. I think they come from a very exclusive understanding of cinema, and I don't think they do it accidentally. I think movie theaters today are so different from past movie theaters. Like, if you watch movies like Cinema Paradiso or any of those movies that are about movie theaters in post-1942, they were very different types of movie theaters than today. Like, it was very communal. People talked, people cried, It was like a Shakespeare play. There's hecklers. But today, movie theaters aren't like that. If you were like being nostalgic about your fucking silent and dark movie theaters, your ancestors experienced a different type of movie theater than you did, where there were hecklers, where it was bright, where the projector could light on fire in the middle of the movie theater without anyone knowing. Time changes, and that's how you got to deal with it.
So I think I tried to watch a Martin Scorsese film today. I tried to watch, what was it? Hot Money, Bad Money. What the fuck is that movie called?
I thought it was Mean Streets that you watched.
Mean Streets. That was the one I tried to watch. It was so boring. Oh my God. I'm sorry, Martin Scorsese. I'm sorry, El Scorcho. So instead, I watched Lone Wolf and Cub, Baby Cart at the River Styx.
That's a good one.
73, I think. 72, 73.
Those are all great.
So have you seen any of these? I know, Tori, you like the manga. Have you seen any of the movies?
I've seen three of the movies.
How fucking good is this movie? It's like fucking fantastic.
As someone, I love the manga, and although the movie kind of goes in its own direction with it, it gets a little bit more goofy than the manga. I think the movie is still fucking great. It's just a good time to watch. They're the kind of movies that you could binge these movies. Like I could watch five of these back to back.
No, they're fantastic. They move. The basic premise is that there's this guy, Ito Okami, and his son Daigoro Okami are just like kind of on the run from the Yagasu, the Shadow Yagasu, an enemy clan or something like that. And they're basically just assassins for hire.
I think it's Ogami.
Is it Ogami or Okami?
That's what it is in the manga is Ogami.
Okay, in the movie it's Okami, which means wolf, maybe?
Yeah, have you played Okami?
And the movie is definitely...
I only say it was slightly sillier because of how serious the manga is. The manga is so serious. It takes itself maybe almost too seriously sometimes.
Well, there are silly moments. The kid presses a button on the stroller that his dad is pushing him in all the time, and a blade shoots out and kills someone. This happens twice in the movie where the kid like presses a button on the cart and like blades shoot out and he just cuts people. Like this little 3-year-old kid who's so fucking adorable, by the way. He's so cute. He's like got these pudgy little cheeks. And there's very little times that he says things. He almost only ever says like, he says like, hey, dad. And that's usually about it. The best moment is after Ito's like been gravely wounded, trying to get to the person he's supposed to assassinate. And is like kind of like passed out because from blood loss. The son like runs to the river. And like he's doing that like little kid run where like he's kind of like got his hands in the air. And he's like, tump, 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 tump. And he keeps trying to pick up the water in his hands at the river. To give it to his dad, but he can't, so he just drinks water and just spits it back in his dad's mouth, which is like super adorable and kind of gross. But his dad still needs food, so he goes to this like statue, this like little statue where an offering is, and he like looks at the food in front of the offering and he's like thinking about taking it and stuff like that. And so the little kid takes off his jacket and like gives it to the statue and then takes it from the offering and like bows after he does it. So like this kid is fucking super adorable and super kind. I really like this. I really fucking like this movie. It's wild, it's crazy. Watch it. There's like so many. There's like a section where these evil ninjas are attacking Ito, and before they attack, they're doing all this crazy dancing in all this all these striped outfits, and kind of like hypnotizes him for a few seconds, and then they attack. And the main bad guys also have like their own individual weapons. It's like totally great, totally cheesy samurai stuff. But I try to look at this movie in the context of watching it at home, and I will say I think I would have liked to watch it in the theater. I think that's like kind of, I worked at a movie theater for a long time, and I have distaste for the movie theater as like an artifice. Like I kind of hate being around them, but there is like something very nice about like watching it on the big screen with all the noise and stuff. So I was watching this and I was like, yeah, I guess, I mean, maybe this like fucking Dune asshole is right, even though it's a fucking pandemic. And then I realized halfway through that we wouldn't be able to do this podcast if we could only watch movies in theaters, right? Like I have so many notes about this movie. You can't take notes in a theater. I mean, you need light to write. I can't do it on my computer. You can't roll it back. I think we've reached a point where we're too related with our media. We take so much out of our media that we can't just only get it from one space. We have to be able to bring it home with us. We have to be able to dissect it. Like I think the idea of like it only being in this like very specific way that it's presented totally ignores the things that people do with the media after they watch it.
Or the level of availability, which is like, do you want to watch that while you're waiting in the train station on your phone? Or do you want to watch that on the airplane to a degree in which it was like, would you not enjoy it? Because I'm sure you still would, but like, would it be the same kind of enjoyment? I know that the ending tagline of this podcast is, if you're going to watch a movie, do it with the lights off.
That's true.
I know maybe we don't, none of us do that every time or something, but like, maybe there is something to be said of a ritual. But I agree with you. I want to be able to watch movies at home, but maybe I don't think we should go so far in the opposite direction of what maybe someone like Villeneuve is suggesting. But also, maybe we should be more mindful of like, why do we want to consume media in the first place? In certain places, the allure of the availability is taking over the media.
Without sounding like, oh my god, cell phone bad, you know, like that old thing, I will say it is like sometimes a little disconcerting to be in public and instead of other people communicating with each other, they're just like watching a YouTube video. And I don't think that's always a problem, but like, some of the best times I've had, like when I was at the movie theater, was like when people would put their phones down and we could just shoot the shit. Like, nothing was more boring to me than just like watching a YouTube video on my telephone. I agree, Tori, that I think there's something to be said about being oversaturated, being able to grab any kind of media whenever you want it.
I really don't have any answer, and I just wanted to float around this idea, mostly because when I was watching on the movie on the plane, I was getting frustrated, and I was getting distracted. I was looking out the window at the clouds. You know, there's things happening around me. I can't entirely focus on the movie. I'm uncomfortable because I'm on a fucking airplane. It was spawned out of this idea of like, well, I'm not even enjoying this movie. And sometimes the movies I watch on planes are movies I would never watch otherwise. Like, I watched like The Revenant on the plane and like Avengers Infinity War, which is, you know, I know a lot of people's thing, but not a movie I would probably go see otherwise, just to fill time. And it's not to say that time was wasted. I would have been just sitting on an airplane anyway.
Also, speaking of trains and planes.
And automobiles.
And automobiles, exactly.
Oh, it's a movie. Oh, we made a movie reference. Oh.
Cars. Do you like Cars 2?
Cars 2? Cars 2. I would fuck one of the cars. I want you guys to guess which one it would be.
Mater.
Okay, Walter, do you have a guess?
I think you want to fuck the exhaust pipe.
Okay.
No, not what part of...
Yeah, which car from the Cars franchise?
Oh, I don't know any of... The green one.
So you think you know so much about movies and you don't know about the Cars characters?
No, I don't know the Cars characters.
Oh, interesting. Looks like someone's bad at movies. Yes, it is Mater. I want to have sex with Tow Mater. Played by Larry the Cable Guy. Southern Paragon. Get her done.
What's funny about Suede, about you saying you would want to watch in a theater, I could definitely imagine wanting to watch Lone Wolf and Cub in a theater, you know, kind of like a fun movie theaters, you know, doing those.
Yeah, there's actually a movie theater. There's a movie theater in Roanoke called The Grandin that has been officially made like a landmark, non-profit-y type thing. They do a lot of late night old movies. They do Rocky Horror every year. They did Jaws a while back. That was actually the first time I saw Jaws. Was in theaters, actually.
Wow, these movies are so cult. Ooh, so art
fucking,
house.
Fucking lick my tail.
But I think, I watched Jaws, like, last year for the first time. I'd never seen it before.
Well, I watch it in theaters, so I'm kind of cooler than you.
Okay, so what I think is interesting about the Lone Wolf and Cub movies is that I kind of want to watch them at home. They're so, like, homey, comfy movies that you can just enjoy. I don't know, to me, I have an image of, like, watching those at home. No, I think that is my optimal choice for like that kind of movie, actually.
If you can watch a movie by scraping spaghetti off your belly button and eating it while you're doing it, then that's the perfect movie to watch at home.
You're talking about a belly button meal. It's like a sink meal, only it's your belly button.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, I've seen your belly button. It's always dirty. Clean it out better. Just do that. And you'd be so much of a better person if your belly button was cleaner, Walt.
How does my belly button meal have flavor then?
That's true. Gotta get some of those good spicy skin notes. We watched Boruto in theaters, the new Naruto movie, a while back ago. You know, normally it's something that you just, like, put on while you get high or whatever. That's how, like, most people, I watch anime these days. And I was terrified it was just going to be, like, a bunch of people with, like, Naruto headbands and, like, fake furry tails and, like anime backpacks. And I would be, like, 26. I was, like, probably 24 at the time. And I'd be, like, just surrounded by a bunch of, like, total mega anime nerds who I just couldn't. But it was actually just, like, a bunch of regular-ass human beings. And it was very cool to watch in theaters because everyone everyone, like, at the end when, like, there's this big reveal, everyone in the theater lost their shit. So I think watching cult movies, like, there is something very comfy about it, like you're talking about, Tori, about, like, watching, like, it's snowing outside and you've, like, got a pleasant buzz going and you're, like, watching Lone Wolf and Cub in a blanket. There is, like, something very nice about that. But the communal space of watching something that's, like, got a cult following or is a little campy that, like, everyone is there because they give a shit about it, not just because, like, it's something to watch. That experience is really engaging. Same thing with when we watched Akira, right?
Except for me, who didn't actually know the movie Akira and had no idea what I was walking into and was very high. And it started and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. This looks cool. And then, you know, as it progressed, blew my fucking mind. And I was like, this is insane. But it was great to see. That was a great movie to see in the
theater. Say my viewing of that film in that moment was a little weird. And this is actually something that I think is probably worth talking about. Seeing movies with other people, I was going with this dude who I was like kind of like trying to be romantic with. And I don't remember if this was before or after we started dating. He whispered in my ear a bunch while we were watching the movie. And it very quickly became like less of like us watching the movie and more just like very intense.
Dude, you were
flirting.
Complaining the first time we watched it. You were like, oh, I'm so annoyed that they did that.
Yeah.
I think you were sitting next to me. I was sitting on the far end. You were sitting next to me and this person was sitting on the right of you because you also kept talking to me because I remember getting annoyed and being like, shut up. So you were probably drunk.
I was a little drunk, but I think that is like an added weirdness about theater is like the energy of like, you know, like a date in a theater, right? It's like totally, it's like very dark. It like can be romantic.
How many of you had like your first sexual encounter as a, like a middle schooler in a movie theater?
I did not have sex until my...
No, not like sex. I just a general erotic encounter. Sorry.
Are you kidding me? My first erotic encounter that wasn't like me with my hand was also in college.
Sorry. All right, sorry.
I went on a couple movie theater dates in high school, and I mean in middle school. Nothing happened. Dude, I don't even think I had pubes till like fucking eighth grade.
Yeah, Tori is such a Chad with his greasy
penis.
Yeah,
such a
shit.
Oh.
No, I just remember being a degenerate middle schooler and, you know, like...
Finger blasting. What are you in third grade finger blasting each other?
Yes, exactly. Third graders finger blasting each other, yes.
No, tell me about this fucking sexual experience you had in the theater.
No, I just wanted to bring up what I thought was a shared experience of being a very awkward, like, middle schooler and quote-unquote, you know, like, going out with someone, but you're not really going out because you don't even, like, talk to them that much.
Yeah, see, Walter and I, we didn't have those experiences. Walter, when was the first time you kissed someone? Was it college?
Probably, yeah. Actually, I think about it, I did go on a date to watch Up. You know how the woman... What's her name? Wifey?
She doesn't know if she has a name.
Oh, she dies, right?
Yeah.
And then a little boy was like, Mommy, is the movie over? Really loudly. And we both looked at each other and laughed about it. But then I never saw her again. But talking about this, though, I think I really understand what my opinion is on watching movies at the movie theater. I think the responsibility to get people to watch movies in the movie theater is on movie theaters, not on us, not on
yes.
The person who can only watch movies at home. So when the director blames the viewer, I think that is incredibly wrong. He should be blaming the capitalist fucking movie theaters that are problematic. And you can have a diverse type of movie theater too. Not every movie theater has to be the same. Today, a lot of movie theaters are basically even designed the same fucking way.
No, I think it's a very good point.
Because I was thinking about the micro cinema in New York City that I used to volunteer at. It's called The Spectacle. And it's only for like 30 people, a very fucking different type of movie theater experience. And when you said that you really liked watching cult movies where everyone actually showed up to give a fuck, well, if you showed up to that movie theater, you didn't just give a fuck about the movie. You gave a fuck about the movie.
Exactly.
Theater. Back in the old days when you only had one movie theater in the village, everyone gave a fuck about that movie theater, even if they didn't think of it like that. But it was literally your most exciting source of entertainment. Like, it would gather the whole village to go see that. And if you didn't see the movie, you missed the fuck out. It's like forgetting that to read the newspaper.
We've talked a lot about movies you would want to watch in theaters. There are a lot of movies you wouldn't want to watch in theaters. I actually don't like watching horror movies in theaters. I don't have a lot of the control I'd like. There's other movies that I wouldn't want to watch in theaters, right, that are like a little too weird. And like I would feel kind of weird watching Natural Born Killers in theaters. There's just certain movies. Joker's another one. I don't know if I want to watch that in theaters. It feels like not an experience I necessarily want to share. Joker's maybe a bad example.
I get what you mean. Just... you feel uncomfortable. Do you think it would be different, though, if, like, the movie theater space was a different kind of space?
I mean, maybe, but, like, I don't know. It'd be, like, so, for instance, watching Salo, 120 Days of Sodom or whatever, I feel like that'd be hard to watch in theaters.
I don't know. I think it's up to the space. I think a space can make it watchable.
You think a space can curate that? I would be interested to see what that kind of space is like.
It would have to be curated. I think that's the key word there, is for certain movies have to be curated, like art pieces, which I guess they are.
Yeah, you have to set up expectations, right? Because there's a difference between watching, like, Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire and, like, watching...
And fucking kids.
Yeah, pretty much. Rough movie.
I watched Spider-Man with Salo. I think it's perfect. In fact, I think Spider-Man would have been better if they just put excerpts of the kids eating poop.
Double feature, Spider-Man No Way Home, followed by
Salo. No, I like Walter's idea of every cutting every other scene. So, like, first Spider-Man, like, does a big punch, and then, like, there's just, like, a bunch of, like, really unkind Italian people just, like, brutalizing a teenager. Just, like, every other scene is just, like, oh, look, he's gonna do another big punch! And it's, like, oh, now they're eating shit off the floor.
And, Swade, and this is a passing thought, also, like, in some respects, right, like, maybe... Right, I think we could, like, shock value could be important sometimes. Maybe Salo would have a different kind of impact if it went straight to streaming than if a bunch of people had to sit down at a movie theater and be like, what the fuck is this?
Right, because really, I mean, Salo is not that good of a movie. I mean, really, like, it's kind of a bad movie, I think. But it's social commentary that got a dude killed because he was talking smack about Italian fascists. So, like, that's kind of its relevance. Because it was able to be seen on a big screen, it matters, right, as a piece of history. You're right, if it went to... I mean, because there are plenty of shitty movies that have, like, really unkind things happen in them that go straight to video, that are just like, Sleepaway Massacre Titty Slicer 9, and it's like 2.5 hours of gore porn. And it's like, no one needs that. That's not, like, a good, kind movie. That's just, like, meanness.
Do you want to hear something pretty interesting about Italian movie theaters, though? A lot of art house films that couldn't make money would go to Italian pornography cinemas and ask if they could screen them. An Italian told me this... He said it's because Italians were so Catholic. So if the pornography cinema is going to ask you, do you want to watch an art house movie or the porn movie? They can't admit they are going to watch the porn movie. So they just go to the art house movie.
That's pretty awesome. I like that.
But yeah, that's like the same thing of we're talking about, like, watching an art house movie in a porn movie theater. Dude, that's an entirely different type of experience, too.
Like, I'm, like, reading Bukowski, and he's, like, talking about in some short story, like, character going into a porno, and there's, like, guys jerking it all over the place. Like, that's, that was a different experience. If you wanted to masturbate to live pornography, you'd have to jerk it in front of other people.
I will say, from the perspective of someone who worked at a movie theater, I think there are some unpleasant elements about working at a movie theater that has to do with customer expectations. There's this assumption that every moment at the movie theater is going to be so much fun. It means when you come in and there's a line, you get frustrated. Like, a movie theater is supposed to be a vacation, but instead of for a week long, it's like a 3-hour period. It makes this ugly experience where, like, you're really frustrated at the person who's, like, 16 and is just... I did not work at the theater when I was 16. I took a semester off of college / dropped out and worked there for a little bit. You know, there's just, like, a shitty teenager there who, like, doesn't give a shit. This is, like, his first job. And you have some, like, old woman who's just furious that this thing is taking a little while. I think there's an assumption a theater is this vacation experience, this perfect experience, kind of loses the authenticity of, like, interacting with a human being, right? Like, every time I've gone and, like, bought something somewhere, I've always had the best time when, like, the guy who's selling me things is, like, also a giant weirdo.
Well, customer service thing. I mean, right? Like a retail...
All I know is back in the old days, if you imagine what a movie theater was, it was like a fucking traffic jam. You know how, like, a bunch of cars on different lanes go into one tunnel and that fucking tunnel always creates a fucking jam lock of cars? Movie theaters were always meant for lines. When did we change our minds to think they weren't?
I didn't think Swade's point though.
No,
was
some of these people were frustrated that there were lines, and it'd be like, why are you mad?
Right, that's what I mean. Like, customers or people's perception of lines being a problem.
Yeah,
right. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, the experience not being what they want it to be, where they think it should be.
When I think that's some of the fact that we can stream everything, right? Like, why would I go wait in the line to see Lone Wolf and Cub in theaters when I can watch it on my TV, in my bed, in my underwear, like, while I'm casually browsing pornography on my telephone? Like, that's, like, why would I ever go to a theater and wait in a line, right? I think is the argument. And it's because people have the wrong idea. The theater's not a mini vacation. It's, like, an experience.
And I don't want to blame that viewer for that. I want to blame the movie theaters for that.
Right. We need theaters that let you come in your underwear, let you watch porn, let you jerk off.
Or have a movie theater that, like, when the old lady gets fucking angry, the movie theater is like, fuck off. Fuck all grannies inside the front side. Fuck all grannies, especially if you're white. Get the fuck out of here, Karens. Just have one side like
no
that.
No old women.
I used to say this thing at, well, I guess, like, I'm not employed by Trader Joe's anymore, so I can talk about Trader Joe's.
Ooh, I worked at Trader Joe's.
Oh, yeah, 1 second.
I'm so cool.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Look at my cool pocket protector. I'm a nerd and I work at Trader Joe's.
Does that make me cool? Because look at this fucker's talking about, oh, I volunteered at the indie movie house that only seats 30 people. That's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Oh.
That's true. Walter, you are the most insufferable. Not me. I'm from the streets, bro.
I used to talk about this thing in Trader Joe's being like, I want to design a grocery store where I can kick people out. I can ban people for being assholes. Because this was my point about Suede's thing. I think this is a problem with, like, retail, you could say, right? That there's this conception that, well, me as, like, the consumer, I can do whatever I want. And this space is not a communal space. It's my space.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think we need to change this idea of, even when you're shopping, this is not your space. This is a shared space that we have to keep together as a community in some way. Maybe that doesn't involve a lot of work, but it involves a certain amount of decency and respect. And I would make this as a joke, but part of it would be sincere, right? Because, like, yes, I think there should be movie theaters that should be able to be like, this person's being an asshole. I'm gonna kick you out.
No, I mean, that is one of the nice things about working at a small business. I've never called anyone an asshole, but there have been times I've pushed back on customers. There's the two thing I can think of is during the height of the COVID pandemic. Not that we're not still living in a hellscape, but, like, this was, like, when everyone was like, oh shit, what's happening? But we had opened back up. If customers didn't wear a mask, I would look at them and I would say, hey, friend, do you have a mask? And they would be like, no. And I'd be like, well, I have an extra one right here. And I had, like, a little box of plastic masks, and, like, they're all, like, little wrappings, right? You know, something you could just give a customer. And they'd be like, I don't need that. And I'm like, okay, well, then I'm going to have to ask you to leave, but feel free to come back after the pandemic's over. They would, like, say some shit sometimes. Every once in a while, they'd be like, yeah, whatever, man. I didn't want to buy a book anyway. And I'd be like, okay, have a wonderful rest of your day. I never had to tell anyone to fuck off.
Even in your story right now, the funny thing is that the reason why these customers think they want to own the space or can do whatever they want in a store, they think it's like an individual choice. Like, yeah, they think it comes from them. That's not true. The reason why they can do that is because the space itself
allows it.
Yeah, that's why customers first, customers first. That is the fucking motto of so many companies. And the reason why they say that is because they want to create a space where their customers are tricked into thinking they're making their own minds.
But we don't act like that. I've been in public with all of you guys, and we act like shitheads, and we used to act like shitheads in public sometime. We'd be drunk. There were times Walter pulled his penis out in public, and we had to punch him pretty hard.
I'm gonna get canceled for that one day. It's gonna bite fast.
Yeah, it's gonna be pretty funny.
In front of the Cheesecake Factory. It wasn't open. There was no one there, but it was in front of the Cheesecake Factory.
The Cheesecake Factory. What was that street called? Do you remember? What is it? What was the street?
Delaney.
Delaney Valley.
We're getting a little specific.
Yeah, whatever. What are they going to do? Dox us? You know.
They're going to go, Walter pulled out his dick.
Yeah, right here. Put a star.
On the walking tour.
Put a star right in front of Delaney Valley.
Dude, Towson, literally the only thing fucking famous there is All Time Low, and now my penis.
Yep, it's perfect. Walter's penis. Historical penis.
I just upped their tourism by 50%.
And, there was Towson University had the White Pride group.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, Vice did it like a whole expose.
Jesus fucking Christ. We didn't go there. We went to Goucher because we were a bunch of nerds. But so, you know, we're not assholes in public. I've never once seen you, Walter, or Tori. I've never seen either of you be unkind to someone in a service setting.
Well, we've all worked various retail jobs. I mean, Walter, you know, Walter was like, you know, performing poverty. But it still counts.
Okay, so, but remember when we went to get food with that person and they were pretty mean to the Uber driver and also weird to the waiter.
Yes, I know. Yes, they were kind of mean. Talking back just from the Uber driver asking like, hey, how's it going?
And I know they work service jobs. So what's the difference? What's the difference? And it wasn't a class thing because we I mean, like, if we're being real here, me, Tori, and Walt all...
I was the highest class.
Well, and I'm like pretty solidly middle class, depending on the situation. And Tori's a street person.
You're only middle class because you live in Roanoke, Virginia.
That's true. It's kind of cheap to live here. So yeah, that is fair.
I think I have a little bit of insight into this because, like, I've had arguments with my mom about these kinds of issues.
We're putting your mom on blast right now? Are we doing a mom blast?
A little bit of a mom blast, which is, you know, her response would be like, well, like, it's their job, right? Like, you have to do your job well, no matter, like, what kind of thing. And I think there's a little bit of resentment involved in it, to be perfectly honest. And so I think that's kind of where it comes from, of, like, a lack of desire, whether cognizant or not.
It happened to me, so I get to do it now.
Well, yeah, like, I think the resenting person doesn't even know why they think it.
Tori, your mom's not old, but she is older than us. She's, like, I think 40, 42, 45?
No. She's, like, 50-something. She's middle-aged.
Yeah, but Tori, even though she's older, all your friends wanted to fuck your mom, though. That was kind of weird, huh?
That's true. We all did want to fuck Tori's mom a little bit. Sorry, miss. You want to take my last name?
I don't have my dad's last name.
I'd fuck your dad, too.
Well, that's great.
I'd fuck you.
Yeah, let's do it right now.
What in?
Pull out your penis, Tori.
And so we went to these hot.
Don't, like, ignore me. Pull your penis out.
We went to these outdoor, like, hot baths in Reykjavik.
What's Reykjavik? Is that a Bionicle town?
That's over the jet stream. That's near the jet stream.
We went to this hot, like, this, you know, bath, like, outdoor hot bath that people just go to regularly during the winter in Reykjavik. But to get into the hot bath, you have to, and afterwards, you have to shower nude.
Yeah, no, there are a bunch of places like that. Same, like, that's like how it is in Russian bathhouses and Korean bathhouses.
Yeah, and I'm not against it, but growing up in America, I'm just automatically very uncomfortable about...
Your dong.
Yeah.
Dude, imagine if Joe Biden came out and was like, if you need to take a bath on this hot summer day, make sure you do it in a commuter bath. Don't do it at home. That's fucking Martin Scorsese and Denis Villeneuve.
No, I mean, you're right. That is them. Yeah.
Right, and we would have the same response of like, well, it's the government's responsibility to make sure that we have access to pools, to clean pools, and everyone
Did
has.
Did you get
access
to see your mom's
them.
Boobs, Tori?
No, I just went. I only went with my sister, and you split up gender. But I had a point to this. I wasn't just mentioning it. What were you talking about right before, Sway?
I was talking about your mom's boobs, I think.
No. Right before.
Fucking your dad.
I was also talking about fucking your dad.
I think I thought of it because, no, I don't know.
I wanted to know, is there communal bathing in China? I know there are communal bathing all over the world. So is there like a thing like that in China?
Historically, I don't know what, because I'm Asian, I should be able to speak about China history.
I'm not talking about history. I'm talking, look, like, all right, let me tell you this.
I mean today.
Yes, as you meant today.
I don't know about today.
It was great. It was great. I would.
No, I would like to be nude in a bath with you guys. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
I think it did take a little for me to get over the whole nude thing.
Why? It's just my penis.
Well, I just, because it's not that I'm not conceptually against it. It's just I have an innate kind of uncomfortableness about being naked.
Toxic masculinity. Alert.
Small?
I think it's partially like a masculinity thing, but I think it's partially like growing up in America, there's a lot of, what is it? Not Protestant. You know, it's the other religion. What was
Pentecostal?
No.
Buddhism.
Buddhism.
Pislam.
The religious group.
Buddhism.
What did the pilgrims practice?
Oh, Pormonism.
Thanksgiving.
What did the pilgrims were, what?
Perky.
They had perky.
Perky
beans.
And past potatoes.
Puritan.
Puritan.
It's like the puritanical feelings we have about nudity and bodies, and there's a certain prudeness, right, about, I think, in America, about, I don't know, do you just absorb it through growing up? No, I think we all, I mean, well, we've gotten over it with Walter. We all just need to do it, and then we wouldn't care.
Have you never been skinny dipping?
I mean, that's some rural stuff. It's not easy to do in cities.
Here's what I don't get about skinny dipping. I do it, but I'm pretty sure it feels pretty much the same. It's not like my balls are getting wet.
It does not. I swear to God, it feels so different.
Really?
Yeah, because like the fabric clings to the fabric clings to you, and it like gets in your skin, and you can like you don't have the waistband pulling on you anymore.
Also, public water and private water actually feels different. I don't know why, but it does.
And I will say the only places I have been skinny dipping.
Are you just gonna pass over that?
No, you're right. I wanted to just, it was like, I kind of wanted to talk about skinny dipping, and the phrase Walter said was like kind of too wild for me to want to interact with, but I'm willing to go back to it. Yeah. Whoa, what the fuck are you talking about?
So no. It's like, let's pose a theoretical. So I have a lake on my property.
Okay.
It's my lake. I go swimming in that lake. That feels different than go swimming in a lake that is.
Yes.
Even if both have no people.
Yes.
Is it the water that feels different?
I think, you know what it is? It's probably like why kissing in the bedroom feels different than kissing outside.
All right. I guess that makes sense, actually.
Yeah, okay.
I swear to God, though, it feels different. It feels fucking different. There's something uniquely different about it.
Do you remember? So wait, I don't think you were there, but Walter, we drove out to see some like a meteor shower. We couldn't see it. It was too bright, but we drove way out of Towson. We were on like a bridge over Loch Raven. Me and Walter were drunk and I had to piss, so I pissed off the bridge into the lake, and Walter tried to pee off the bridge and he couldn't get it high enough, so he didn't pee over like the fence, he peed like on the barricade. It just got like piss all over himself. I just remember being like, I was 100 feet away, and he seemed pissed at me like, oh no.
So I've only been skinny dipping in two different places. I had this buddy whose house had a pool, and I went skinny dipping at his place. And then there's this fucking river, like little pond out in Vermont.
This one's public, right?
The pond, yeah.
Well, how'd that feel in comparison to your friends?
Oh, comparison to the pool. Well, I will tell you that so first of all, I don't know if you guys are probably going to think this is weird. The internet might blast me for this. I did go skinny dipping with my cousins in this public place.
Why is that weird?
I don't know.
Is skinny dipping always sexual? Is that what you're implying here?
No, it wasn't sexual. No, it's not. But you know, some people. I mean, we did suck each other's dicks after. Is it still weird then?
That actually makes them work. Healthy.
It makes it healthy. It's just an exchange. It's just family bonding.
Was it Bruce Willis?
It was Bruce Willis. It was me and Bruce Willis.
The movie I brought is Linda, Linda, Linda by Nobuhiro Yamashita. Which, of course, we all know this song. Linda Linda is a song by the Blue Hearts, a Japanese rock band from the 80s. Funny enough, though, I think we all like different covers of the song. Tori likes the song actually from this movie, even though he hasn't seen it. And you like the Stans Punk version. So, just guys want to give you guys an opportunity first to defend your shit taste. So, go ahead.
I just like the Stans Punks. Think they make good music. Always like their music. It's the first. This is the first version I heard was Linda Linda by Stans Punks. Because I discovered the Stans Punks because I was listening to, I was watching Naruto, and I wanted to figure out who wrote the No Boy No Cry opening, and I was like, oh, it's Stans Punks. And then I was also watching Soul Eater at the time, and I was like, who did the fucking what was the last bit? I Want to Be. I forget the title.
I Want to Be the Very Best song. No one ever was. No. To catch love is my real test.
No! How dare you? No, but the I Want to Be song, and so I was like, oh, these guys are great. And so I remember in high school listening to some of their albums, and one of their albums has Linda Linda on it. And I was like, this song fucking kicks ass. And so I actually thought that was the original. I did not know at the time that it was even written by the Blue Hearts. So that's why I like that one the best.
What about you, Tori?
I really like the movie version. I like the original by the Blue Hearts as well.
Yeah, the original is good.
But I really like the movie version, mostly because of the energy of the scene where they play it. And I haven't even seen the movie, but she's like the singer. She's like kind of nervous. And then they start and it goes so well. And she gets so into it and all the kids get super excited. And they're all like, yeah. And they're all screaming. And it's just like, I don't know. It's like watching a live show, and the energy is really fun, and it reminds me of screaming it with my friends, So I like that version.
When was the first time you heard Linda Linda? Sway just told us, but what about you?
You definitely played that version from the movie.
I think I first heard that song from 4chan, not gonna lie. I think that was like a theme song with like Moot.
Yeah, he's not even involved with 4chan anymore. He sold it
but
or some shit.
There used to be like, I don't even know if it still exists, but there was like this 4chan Moot sort of theme song, I think, and it used Linda Linda, and that was the first time I heard
it. I want to talk about lyrics really quickly. So Rocky's my little brother, and he was talking mad smack about My Chemical Romance today because he hates My Chemical Romance, and I have a fondness for it. Basically, what it turned out was that I was like, you know, I know it's not super musically complicated, it's pretty simple, but there's like an energy there, there's an experience, you know, there is Gerard Way is like trying to convey something to the listeners. And he was like, yeah, I don't care about any of that. And I was like, oh, what about this song from this band? He was like, yeah, I don't know. And basically what I realized is my little brother's just a music robot and he like can't comprehend emotions through music. He's like, does it sound good mechanically? And I'm like, fucking, I don't know, Mr. Roboto, don't worry, God, like, whatever, who knows? So that's just like this weird, I was like, I tried to show him like folk, like there's this folk punk band, Johnny Hobo and the Freight Trains, that's like also kind of edgy. My first college partner really loved Johnny Hobo and the Freight Trains, and so when I listened to that, and it's like distant enough from me now to where when I listen to it, like I think about the good times with them and the bad times, and like it's like a really like nice experience, you know, and it reminds me of the dorm I lived in and stuff like that. You know, so like it's you know, and Rocky's like, yeah, whatever. You know, there aren't enough notes. I'm like, fucking okay, whatever. You know, weird child, weird robot.
I was also curious. You guys all know the lyrics of Linda Linda, right?
No, just the chorus. Linda Linda
Linda Linda Linda
Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda
Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Linda Like a rat, I want to be beautiful. Of course, this is very loosely translated. It's not really correct. I've read like a brown rat, I want to be beautiful because you have a beauty that can be reflected in pictures. Then the other time he references rats, like a rat, you're nicer than anyone. Like a rat, you're warmer than anything. Yeah, he's calling Linda a rat, but in a romantic way.
Like a rat, you're warmer than anything. It seems like something's lost in translation, right?
Maybe, but I think...
No, dude.
I think it makes sense. He's saying that rats are underrated, even though everyone hates them. I like them, and that's why I like you.
Like, you know, have you listened to the lyrics from Mississippi Queen, which is a song both you and I really like, Tori? Oh, down around West Point, run Louisiana way, going Cajun lady. You know, like it's a bunch of shenanigans.
No, that's a spicy song right there.
Is it really? What's spicy about?
Oh no, sorry, I'm not thinking about Mississippi Queen. I was thinking about Black Betty.
Black Betty, spicy. So is Black Horse in the Cherry Tree. There was this girl I went to high school with who sang Black Horse in the Cherry Tree. And it always just, I don't know, something about that song. And she was a white lady. I don't know. It's just like talking about marrying the horse. I don't know. It's like, it's weird.
But we all like rats, right?
Yeah, I do, actually. We have a friend, she has pet rats, or she did, and they were like totally sweet and like super fun to like play with and stuff.
I've had gerbils growing up my whole life because my mom's allergic to cats and dogs, so I love rodents.
That's true, dude. Tori has the most fucking gerbils I've ever seen in my entire life. I fucking forgot about that. He is like actually 100.
They all died. They're finally gone. Well, not finally, but like the last of the generation has died out and there are no more gerbils now.
My first real experience with death was the death of my pet hamster, Hammy. Was it Hammy? What was that? No, Mousy was his name. Mousy. That was my first experience with death, was poor Mousy.
Yeah, had a lot of the gerbils come and gone.
Did you ever let them crawl across your nipples?
I used to like to take them out and put them in my socks, and I would have holes in all of my socks because the gerbils would eat through my socks, and I would have holes in all my shirts because I would let them crawl around my room. I loved my gerbils. They're my best friends. I would pretend to be like a rodent and a gerbil in school, like when I ate, and I would eat things like just with my front teeth.
That's honestly pretty cute.
Dude, you...
I think it's cute.
Yeah, it's totally... I was totally not about to be super mean.
I mean, he was a furry very early on. Oh, we never told anyone.
Yeah, it's true. Tori is a furry.
I'm so deep, I didn't even know it.
But it's okay, Tori. This is a safe space.
That's why I need to grow out all my hair. I'm trying to return to my natural gerbil state.
Into your fursona, which is a good portmanteau. I just want to say portmanteau, fursona, Persona and Fur, good-ass portmanteau.
All right, I'll talk about Linda Lynn. So Japanese high school girls or Japanese high school, there's just, I don't know, Japanese people don't like men, so they're weird. They have some weird thing about going on. So Japanese high school girl films are usually marketed as very comfy movies. Even anime or just the media in general, it's marketed that you take a blanket and you can watch it in your hot chocolate and all this stuff. Of course, Linda sort of is part of that. I do think Linda is like one of the least comfy films out there. It's a really weird feeling. I wonder if it's because there's a lot of like small moments in the film that never feel completely gratifying. So a lot of the times you're watching a comfy story, the medium gives you that moment that you go, oh, this film never does. It does like subtly and like sometimes gives you like 50% of it and then it just cuts it. It's fucking weird, honestly. That I think that's why the song Linda 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 was picked, because it's about rats and the film is about like a type of misfit. Here's like an example. The movie starts off with the band breaking up and there's like an internal argument with the band. So because they're like arguing, they desperately create a random band and randomly find this like Korean exchange student to be their vocalist, who can't actually even speak Japanese very well. Another example is that there's a lot of weird side plots that don't make much sense. There's like this Korean teacher who pops out and is like sad her Korean exchange student is getting into music and not into Korean exchange. But like, I don't even know if the film is judging the teacher or not. You never really get that conclusion of what is the fucking point of this teacher. And that's just littered throughout the whole movie. All my comfy feelings of this film always feel so unfinished. So the first time I watched this movie, I didn't really like it.
And it's interesting, Walter. You like this movie. You also, I mean, we both love K-On!, which is very similar in that it's cute girls making music.
Yes. If we use K-On! As an example, though, like, think of it this way. You know how in K-On!, like, you have, like, the girls having fun, and then they give you the moment where the girls are together and they go, this is a great time. In this film, it's like the girls have fun and then it doesn't tell you if that is really fun for them, and then never gives you the conclusion where they sit together and go, ah, nice.
So how does the performance then fit into the rest of the picture? Because I literally only know this movie through this one scene.
Yeah, the only scene I've ever seen is the one you've showed us of them playing Linda Linda.
So like, and the lead singer, right, who's the, you said the Korean exchange student, she seems like I said, she's kind of like shy and awkward at first and then gets really into it. So is this like that moment, or how does this...
Yeah, is that not the catharsis?
Yeah, it is the catharsis. It is literally the end. I think that scene is really good, but I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. There's just something a little like not completely fulfilling about the scene when you watch it in its entire place. So what happens is they run to that auditorium because it's raining. They're late because they're like rats. Their band is kind of unofficial. They've only been able to practice at night, have not practiced at normal times because their normal studio is like full. So they arrive late, it's raining, and because it's raining, the school festival is like closing, so everyone goes to the gym.
Are they're not supposed to be performing then? This is not like a scheduled performance, or this, I'm confused by like the nature of what you said.
They should be performing, but they came like 30 minutes late and they literally only had like 7 minutes to perform. The audience who got so excited, they're not supposed to be there. They were all busy outside in the school festival, outside when the sun was hot. So this whole live event had like very little people watching until it started raining.
Right, so it's like this kind of awkward high school band where no one would have even given two shits if the circumstances hadn't been.
Another example is some of their practice rooms. So this is a really weird shot where they're basically playing the whole song of Where My Right Arm Is from the Blue Hearts, which is also a very sick song. But they are basically just practicing and you watch this whole song while they're like having fun in the middle of a room, but your view of it is outside of the room in the dark.
The shot is framed that like they're playing music inside a room, but you're watching it almost voyeuristically through an open door.
Yeah, I think the second time when I watched this film, I noticed this stuff more, that there are some things in this movie that on purposely try to edge you on that comfiness and don't give it to you. Unique. But I did learn to really like this feeling this time around, actually. I'm kind of curious how you guys feel when you watch Asian or Japanese movies, and like there's so many cliques that I don't know if they exist in America. I'm like kind of curious how you guys react.
I think it's a different landscape, but it's similar emotions, right?
Yeah, that's very foreign pieces of media that have culturally, you know, very different worlds than America and the West. It's like, I try to learn where I can specific things about how that world functions. But to an extent, you can't focus on that. You have to, yeah, like I'm jumping off of what Suede said, focus on what you feel like is the feeling in these interactions. Those is what we can relate to.
Do you remember, Tori, when like we would ask, when we lived together, we would ask Walter to do something or not do something? It would usually be not do something, actually. And he'd be like, that's how we do it in China. And we would be like, Walter, can you like not put porn on the TV? Or like, Walter, can you not like eat salad with your hands while you're super drunk and like rub stuff all over you and like scream? And you'd be like, no, that's how we do it in China. And it became very clear to us that Walter was using that excuse to do things that were very much not something that's done
but
in China.
In the same sense, I've had some encounters where, and maybe I've misinterpreted them or Walter has skewed my interpretation of them, but I've been like reading manga or consuming Asian media of some kind, and I've been like, oh, maybe Walter was right, and this is like an Asian cultural thing or something.
No,
you know?
That's Walter tricking you, Walter.
I've genuinely had these moments of being, of thinking like, oh shit, wait, maybe he was serious. Maybe this is a real...
Yeah, there are serious things, like smacking your lips in public for eating in Chinese restaurants. Come on.
Oh, I'm sure that's... I believe that.
But how come you don't smack your lips when you eat in front of your parents?
Because they're from Hong Kong.
I think we've kind of sort of reached the zenith. We've reached the end again. We've learned about each other.
Well, we
kind of
hit our nadir, and then we hit our zenith.
Yep.
I'll just say, enjoy some public water.
Yeah, I think it's important, you know, public water, private water. Remember, if you're enjoying the podcast, to go ahead and give this a 5-star review on whatever you're listening on.
If you thought that we talked about public and private water too much, you can give us 2 stars, but please write a review and say, 2 stars, they talked about public and private water too much.
Yeah, if you want to reach us on Twitter, look us up at @fakefilmfans. And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to email us at fakefilmfans@gmail.com. I want to thank everyone for listening. Look out for private water. And remember, if you're going to watch a movie, do it with the lights off.